Thank you all for coming tonight to Americans for Prosperity's Fortifying Alaska's Future. To begin, we'll kind of go over some guidelines. Obviously, please make sure your cell phones are muted so they don't go off. We also ask that you be respectful. We're going to be doing some presentations here. And then we've been getting a lot of questions. The cards that you guys have received, go ahead and throughout the presentation, if you have a question, go ahead and write it down. At the conclusion of the governor's budget presentation, we'll go ahead and collect all of those. We'll take a quick 5-minute break so that we can gather all those, and then we'll have the panel come back, and then we'll get into the question answers. Again, I want to thank you guys for all coming. The purpose of this is, given a lot, there are a lot of questions about the governor's proposed budget, and at Americans for Prosperity, we really appreciate the approach that really has brought everybody to the table. There's been a lot of talk about this. The budget hasn't been the topic, you know, this much community involvement in the past. And so for that, we really do commend you, Governor, for taking the hard steps, putting this budget to the people, and tonight for being here to let them ask questions and hopefully come away with a few more answers about the budget. So thank you guys for being here. So now I'm going to go ahead and introduce Jeremy Price. He's the Deputy Chief of Staff to Governor Dunleavy, and he and his group are going to kind of go over a few of the details of the proposed budget, as well as the constitutional amendments. And so, Jeremy, if you want to take it away.
Thanks, Ryan. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We've got an all-star team for you today. And what we're going to try and do is have an honest conversation about how we got here and what the path forward is. Now, I think we all know at this point that we face a $1.6 billion deficit. Does everybody know that? Is there any confusion out there? The path forward consists of a few options. We could institute an income tax, a sales tax, an 80% PFD tax, or we can address spending. And the governor's fiscal plan addresses spending and then allows Alaskans to vote on the alternatives, the constitutional amendments. So I'm going to introduce the team. First, we're going to hear from the governor, then we'll hear from the commissioner of revenue, then the OMB director, and then the AG will cover our constitutional amendments. So first up is our quarterback, former state senator and 12th governor, Mike Dunleavy.
So we don't have to go yet. Thank you, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. We got to Kenai this morning, did some work in the Matsu Valley Saturday evening at one event, and we're starting our big road show starting here in the Kenai. We go to Anchorage tomorrow. On Wednesday, we go to Nome, and then we go to Fairbanks, then we go to the Matsu. And then the following week, we're going to continue this. We're probably going to send folks to other places in Southeast as well, other parts of Alaska. But the purpose is, you've probably read the newspaper and heard there's a budget issue going on in the state of Alaska, I'm sure, correct? And as Jeremy mentioned, it has garnered a lot of conversation, and it should, and I'm glad it has. Because that's the way we're going to solve this, is by getting everyone involved, asking the questions, trying to understand what's going on. So I just want to give you a little history of what's happened. We've got some folks here that Jeremy will introduce a little later that can answer specific detailed questions because they've all been part of putting this package together. So as you know, Alaska's had a lot of money for the past 40 years thanks to Prudhoe Bay. About 4 years ago, we had a dramatic drop in oil price. It went from about $113 a barrel, I think in less than 2 years, down to about $26 a barrel. Now what usually happens, and this is not the first time this has ever happened in Alaska, is the price bounces back up. The price usually bounces back up, and in the past we had more production as well. But right now we have about 525,000 barrels. Our price, I think, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $68 a barrel now. But when this crisis really started, it was the first year that Governor Walker was elected. He had a deal with $24, $26 a barrel oil. I think it hit that in February. And so we've been trying to figure out ever since how to deal with it. Under the previous administration, their approach was to use part of the permanent fund and also try taxes. And I think there were at least 9 attempts by the governor to tax, which failed, did not pass the legislature. The permanent fund was a different story. The governor vetoed the PFD down to a certain amount, keeping the other part of the PFD that was vetoed in the earnings reserve. What was interesting was that the first 3 years of his administration, we never used that money to cover the deficit. What we used was money from the CBR and the SBR, Constitutional Budget Reserve, Statutory Budget Reserve. They're a little different. One takes a two-thirds vote to get into it, the CBR. The SBR is just a simple majority. But nonetheless, what happened was oil never rebounded to the extent it needs to, nor was our production there to the extent it needs to be there. So we've had this $1.6 billion deficit we've been dealing with now for several years. Again, Governor Walker's approach was use the PFD. His last year, the Senate and the House voted for SB 26, which was a POMV process to take money out of the earnings reserve under a controlled fashion. And that was going to be a maximum of $2.9 billion last year, $3 billion this year. I ran saying the only way you're going to fix this is through two methods. One is you've got to reduce the spend overall. We're going to look at some graphs here, and you'll see what the historic spend has been. And then the other is to lock it down and keep it down, you have to have a constitutional amendment that limits our spending. We have a spending limit in the Constitution now. The problem is that spending limit was made in the early 80s when spending was at a pretty steep incline. So in order for that spending limit to work, we'd have to spend about $9 billion this year in state funds alone. As you can see, it's too high to actually work. We're proposing we bring that limit down and hem us into what is traditional growth over the years. I'm going to ask for that first slide to go up if we can, okay? And then just want to show. Second slide. Keep going, keep going. Keep going, keep going, keep going, keep going. Keep going. Okay. So what I want to show you is this. So here's 1975, 77, pipelines being built. We start getting oil. The orange color, the rust color, however you want to word it, is revenues. As you can see, as we get more revenues, what do? We start to spend more. When we get in 1969, was anyone here in 1969? Okay, in 69, we got $900 million on the leases on the North Slope. And what do we do with that $900 million? Spent it as soon as possible. I think the budget the year before was $100 to $150 million for the entire state of Alaska. Within 2 to 3 years, we tripled the budget, and we haven't looked back since. But I got to give the people credit back then, including the legislature and Governor Hammond, because they saw what happened. And what they did, and it was just, the budget wasn't quite as large, and we're going to get to this in a moment, wasn't quite as large as it is today, but what they saw was a real problem. And so as a result of that, they put in place the permanent fund in 1977 to save some money. Very wise move. The people of Alaska did, voted that in, constitutional amendment. They also voted a spending limit in 1981. They asked the people of Alaska, should we hem in our spending? Again, the problem with that spending limit was the formulas and the incline of spend was too great to be functional. But the people of Alaska really approved of a spending limit, and in 1986, it was reaffirmed by the people of Alaska. The people of Alaska basically said, we want you guys to not spend everything. The Constitutional Budget Reserve also came in as a constitutional amendment around this time. So the budget's growing, and then what happens? The price of oil falls through the floor in 1986. Remember $9 barrel oil, 87, 88? We thought it was the end of the world then, right? For those of us that were here. I was a teacher in rural Alaska, and I remember our administrators coming in and saying, we have got to reduce. We've got to reduce. The budget's gone from $33, $34 a barrel down to $9. Keep in mind, The volume in the pipeline is increasing. Until 1989, it hits 2 million barrels per day in the pipeline. But if you look, as we got through, and we did, we got through that crisis, the price of oil went down, revenues kind of flattened out, and what flattened out with it basically was the budget. So from about 1987, 88, until 2006, well, it says 5 here, but 2005, 2006, the budget remained flat. It grew at about 2.5% a year. Nobody died. The economy grew. The unemployment rate varied. And we made it through. So for this length of time, this period of time, Alaska was fine. We did okay. Remember the bumper sticker that said, please God, give us another Prudhoe Bay, and we promise not to? Okay, that bumper sticker came out around this time. What happens in 2007? Oil goes through the roof again. Remember we had $154, $55 barrel oil. I remember this on July 5th, I think it was 2009 or 10. So revenues go through the roof. What happens? What else goes through the roof? Spending. We follow the spending. I'm going to show you something, which is, and they'll elaborate on this. If we had kept our spend at about 2 to 2.5% a year, this amount of money that we came into represents about $29 billion. $29 billion we spent extra above the 2.5% a year. Can you imagine what we could have done with $29 billion? We could have provided free electricity for every single Alaska for eternity. We could have built a railroad to Canada. We could have built 14 acreage-sized ports. We could have paid off our pension obligations, our bond obligations. We could have been the most fiscally solvent state in the country if we didn't spend all of this money. The rate of spend during this time, from 2006 to 2013, was 15% a year. There's no economy on the face of the earth that grew at 15% a year. China's economy was only growing at 6 or 7% at its tops. We were spending at 15% a year. And then as you see what happened in 2015, price of oil drops. Here is the problem we're looking at. Here is the problem we need to solve. The price of oil has not gone up significantly enough, nor has the production gone up significantly enough to close this gap. In the past 4 years, to pay for this level of spend, we've spent $14 billion out of the CBR. It's gone. $14 billion. So this gap is not going to close on its own. It's not going to close because of oil prices. We've got to close it. We've got to make some decisions. Again, Governor Walker's approach was to attempt taxes, which failed, but also to use the permanent fund, the PFD. The problem with that is the people of Alaska did not want to use the PFD. People have often talked about the permanent fund dividend, those that don't really like it, as a welfare program, and we can get into all kind of philosophical debates on it, but you got to remember one thing. Prior to when Governor Walker vetoed that PFD, can you recall a time when the people really got upset about the size of the PFD? They didn't. Whether it was $400, $700, $900, $800, $1,000, the people of Alaska accepted what the dividend was because it came from a rules-based system, investment in the stock market and real estate, away from politicians. People of Alaska got upset when we put our fingers in it and manipulated it, and that's where we are today. The people of Alaska, generally speaking, regardless of what you hear, but if you look at every poll that's been done, that's a decent poll, if you talk to folks all over the state of Alaska, they have some serious concerns about politicians getting into this. What we're proposing is that if there's any changes to the permanent fund, or PFD, get the people on our side to vote for it. Now, people will say, well, that's your job, Dunleavy. Your job is to go down and make the tough decisions. Here's the problem. We're only one of 24 states in the country that has a repeal and initiative process in our Constitution. Only one of 24 states. The framers of the Constitution wanted the people of Alaska to have the ability to either initiate laws or repeal laws. And I'll give you an example. The marijuana law that came on the books, that was an initiative by the people of Alaska. A repeal process that we recently undertook was SB 21, the oil taxes. There was an attempt to repeal that tax. So the people of Alaska have the ability to change the outcome at the end game, on the end side of it. We're proposing we get the people of Alaska on the front end through these constitutional amendments. I am proposing and urging the legislature to allow the people of Alaska to spend on a new and updated spending savings limit, to put in a constitutional amendment that says no changes to the permanent fund without the vote of the people, and in terms of taxes, no new taxes unless the people agree to it. Why? Because if the people can agree to that on the front end, we will have a durable fiscal program moving forward, and we don't have to worry about the people of Alaska repealing it or putting initiatives in, which will cause instability. Why is this stability important? I'm going to wrap my segment up here in a second. Because there are people that want to invest in the state of Alaska. I just got back from Texas to try and showcase Alaska at the largest oil and gas conference in the world for investors. And I didn't know what they were going to say about Alaska, but here's what they told me. They said, Alaska has great geology. We want to invest in Alaska. We're still working through the gas line issue. We have lots of gas, lots of oil. We have direct access to the Pacific Ocean and the world. Not many states have that. And we have great infrastructure. They would like to invest up here. But what they're telling me is they're not going to do that until we figure out what we want to do, whether we want to get a permanent fiscal a fix in place or whether we're going to stumble from year to year to year. The other program, the other approach to solving the budget, other than the one I proposed right now, is a stumble from year to year. Don't want to reduce the budget that much, want to take the PFD and potentially taxes. And again, as I mentioned, if the people of Alaska aren't asked what they want through constitutional amendments and or advisory votes, there's a chance that that whole thing will unravel and we'll be back to where we are. And the other thing is this. No matter what we do, we can't keep spending at the rate we're spending. We only have $2 billion left in that CBR. It'll be gone in 14 months. Then there'll be no savings at all. Then the next thing we go into is the earnings reserve of the permanent fund. And you're going to see some slides here in a moment that, in my opinion, it's a wake-up call for all of us. The bottom line is this. We can't keep spending the amount we've been spending. We don't have the revenue for it. We're going to talk in a minute about what it would take to tax every man, woman, and child in the state of Alaska to pay just for that $1.6 billion. And hopefully this entire evening, you'll get something out of this. We're going to answer the questions. But the bottom line is this. I want a permanent fiscal fix through constitutional amendments and reducing the budget. The other folks right now, we'll see what their budget proposals are going to be. They're still working through them. But from what they've said, they want to take the permanent fund to pay for this, and the reductions will not be that much. And so with that, I'll turn it back to Jeremy.
Thank you, Governor. Next, we're going to... Next, we're going to introduce our two running backs. We've got Donna Ardwin and Bruce Tangeman. Commissioner of Revenue Bruce Tangeman has a degree in public finance from Indiana University, was corporate budget officer at Alaska Railroad Corporation, chief financial officer at Doyon Utilities, chief financial officer of Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, and deputy commissioner of revenue under Governor Sean Parnell. Alaska Office of Management and Budget Director Donna Ardwin has a degree in economics and public policy from Duke University, was an investment banker in New York and Tokyo for 7 years, and served seven of our nation's governor over a span of 15 years, and prior to joining the Dunleavy administration, ran an economic consulting firm for 13 years with Ronald Reagan economist Art Laffer. Please welcome Bruce, Commissioner Tangeman, and Director Ardwin.
Thank you, Jeremy. Governor did a great job explaining, looking back in history. We can't figure out what we're going to do going forward until we figure out how we got into this situation. Again, we had a really good run where things were under control. When we saw a spike in revenue, expenditures followed it up, and when the prices dropped, expenditures did not follow down. So that's the situation that we see ourselves in right now. If you go to the next.
Just real quick before you do that, can you go back? They've said I can interrupt them when... Just one last thing. If you look at this blue line, if you look at the tail end of it, what do you see? It's doing what? It's going back up. That was last year. They increased spending last year even knowing we don't have the money to be able to sustain that. That's the problem. That's why we need to get you folks to vote in a constitutional amendment to hem us in. Right there.
All right, this slide elaborates a little bit more on what the governor previously said. A couple different lines here, I'll walk you through all of it. That top line right here is the current constitutional limit. A lot of people don't know we have a constitutional limit on the books right now. It was amended back in 82, and unfortunately the math problem is broken. It says out here we could be spending over $10 billion a year. So it's on the books, but the math is broken. So that's the AG will speak to how we're going to fix that. This dotted line down here is the proposed spending limit that Governor Dunleavy introduced. It's a flat line. It holds expenditures in check. And it really, really shows us what actual spending above what a realistic spending limit would have brought to the state. This is the $29 billion that the governor spoke of. These are revenues that did come in, and they went right back out the door. Now, the first thing that pops into my mind is, you know, what could we have done with $29 billion? We as a state have always lived paycheck to paycheck. We ride oil prices up, we ride them down. Unfortunately, our capital plans do the same thing. We've never had a stable capital plan in place. If we could have had this spending limit and controlled our spending over the last 10 or 15 years, it would have allowed us to put a long-term capital plan in place. And private sector folks, people that own businesses, if you knew the state was going to have a, let's say, $500, $600 million capital plan for the next two decades, it allows you to buy infrastructure, it allows you to prepare to invest in the state as well. So I think that's one of the biggest things we missed out on. We had some really high capital years, but we spent a lot of money, but can you think of any really good capital projects from the last 10 years? We haven't built a road in quite some time. So again, that's an opportunity missed right there in my mind. So this, I'll walk you through both sides because I know people in the back can't see this, but what we have on the right-hand side, the blue section is the principal of the permanent fund. The orange section is the ERA, the earnings reserve account of the permanent fund. And then the top color is the CBR, the Constitutional Budget Reserve. So that's our current situation. We've got about 60, 65 billion in the permanent fund right now. On the left, I had my staff run this three different times for me because I didn't believe this when I saw it. This is a classic example of why you tell your kids to start saving early. When they're 20, 21, 22, and they get that first job, max out that 401k. This is the power of compounding interest. What this on the left shows is if the spending limit that we're proposing would have been in place going back to the early 2000s, our permanent fund would have been over $120 billion. That's less than 20 years ago. Again, over $120 billion. One of the biggest reasons is we just saw a couple of years ago, we saw 20% returns. We saw 18% returns. We've had some really, really good years. That's an opportunity missed. And one of the biggest reasons why this would have grown is because not only are we fixing the constitutional spending limit, but we're also putting in place a savings plan so we don't blow through revenue when we see these high oil prices. So again, this is we would certainly be having a different conversation right now, but we can't go back and fix this, but we can certainly fix it going forward.
Before you go any further, Bruce, that graph on the left, that represents if the $29 billion was put into the permanent fund. If that occurred because of the spending limit, we would not have been having this conversation. We would have been able to pay for government well into the future if our increases were just 2.5% a year. And we probably even could have taken draws out of that to pay down some of our pension obligations and some of our bond debt. But the point of this graph is if we had taken advantage of that, we would not be talking about taxes cutting or taking the permanent fund.
So what are some of the numbers up here? The FY20 permanent fund dividend, based on the calculation, the laws on the books would have been about $6,400 a person. The percent of market value calculation that was put in place last year would have allowed for about $6.2 billion to be drawn.
It would have allowed $6.2 billion total?
Or total, for government and for dividend.
Yeah, so we would have had a pretty good percentage for taking care of government. Mm-hmm.
So again, this is what Wall Street looks at. They know that we as a state, this is still pretty darn good. We're still the envy of probably every other state in the union. But Wall Street, when we look at our rating agency situation, their concern as well is they know that we're running a deficit and we live paycheck to paycheck. And when you hear, I've heard some talk recently that the governor's budget is going to cause instability for investors. It's 180 degrees the other way, folks. we're not seeing the investment in the state because the private sector knows somebody is going to invest in the state. They know that we're outspending our revenue streams. And they know the first place when the CBR goes away and we start overdrawing the earnings reserve, the next place they're going to come is private sector's wallet. So that's why we're not seeing the investment we need to see. Once we get our spending in order and they know that we've got our spending capped and in line, that's when we'll start to see more investment in the state.
We're going to go next one?
Yeah.
Oh, there we go.
So this is kind of a shocking graph, but it does tell a really, really good story about the current situation we're in and what a status quo budgeting would do to the state. We as a state have forever, step one, figure out what our budget is. And it's usually, let's look at last year's budget, let's add a little bit to it, maybe take a little bit away, but usually add to it. And then once step one is done, then we say, okay, how much revenue do we have available? Seldom is revenue above expenditures, unfortunately. First thing Governor Dunleavy told me to do was tell him how much revenue we had. He turned that conversation 180 degrees. His goal was to see how much revenue we had, and then Donna's job was to match expenditures to those revenues. And that's the discussion we're having now. It doesn't fund everything. But we are starting to hear some talk, chatter around the Capitol about other folks' plans, the House plans. Senate probably has a plan. But what we're hearing, I think, from the House's plan is, and this is based on the subcommittee work, we're not making this up, that we've gone through a week or two of subcommittee closeouts. They're starting with last year's budget. I don't know if they don't think we have a spending problem, but they're starting with last year's budget, and we're not seeing big cuts to that budget in subcommittee. So I believe this is basically their plan. Under that scenario, if they're going to balance this budget, they say they're not going to overdraw the ERA, and they say they're not going after additional revenue streams right now. The only thing left is the dividend. So what this shows is, I want to emphasize this, I think a lot of people think, take my dividend. Keep budgets the way they are and just take my dividend. That only works for 1 or 2 years, folks. It's not a long-term plan. And I don't think a lot of people get that until you realize under this status quo budgeting, right here you'd get about a $500 dividend, probably about a $250 dividend next year, and then your PFD is gone for good.
So this is under SB 26?
Yes, sir.
So SB 26 was the bill that was adopted last year by the legislature and signed into law by the governor. It allowed $3 billion to be drawn out of the earnings reserve account. It didn't say how much would go to the dividend. It just said you can only withdraw $3 billion for government and the dividend. But under the current scenario, if nothing changes at the rate of spend that we are incurring right now, and if there's no reductions in the budget, that entire $3 billion would be gone in 2.5 years. In other words, there won't be any PFD in 2.5 years out of SB 26. So what they're going to have to do is go into the earnings reserve and take more money out of it, which will reduce the earnings reserve over time. So it's gone in 3 years. It doesn't last forever. And that's what I'm talking about, budgeting 1 year at a time and stumbling from 1 year to the next to the next.
So that, and this plays out on this slide, and this also really shows why we're hearing a lot about, you know, a step down path. Let's tackle this over several years. Well, the years of having the revenue available to do that are gone. We should have started doing that a couple of years ago when it was Senator Dunleavy. He proposed that. Let's do $750 million, a couple hundred million a year. The Senate majority was on board with that, and then we came to a governor and a House that wanted to grow the budget. So we were fighting over trying to cut $50 million, let alone $250 million 3 years in a row. So what this budget shows is growing with inflation and population. Again, it's not a drastic change, apparently, but you start to see the dividend goes away immediately. We start to turn to ad hoc draws. That's reaching into the earnings reserve and pulling above and beyond that POMB calculation that's sustainable. This is where the earnings reserve goes away. Again, it's 2040. It's not too far out into the future, but That's our last available revenue stream. This is really the shocking part, is those red bars. That's where we start taking money from you, because the budget is going to continue to grow, and this is for illustrative purposes only. We're not going to be able to find $7 billion in taxes to feed that beast out there. That's impossible.
Well, Bruce, what is the calculation now to fill that $1.6 billion in terms of taxes? What would we have to tax every man, woman, and child?
So that calculation is about $2,300 for every man, woman, and child. If you wanted to go after working Alaskans, use 300,000 working Alaskans, that'd be about $5,300 each.
So if you're a working couple, that's about $10,000 just to fill this year's gap.
And it's an ongoing problem.
And then it grows
problem.
Every year,
yeah,
at 4% a year. So your taxes would have to grow at 4% a year under this scenario. And you can see what's going to happen pretty soon. At $10,000 a tax on a family or two working individuals in a household, people are going to start to think about leaving and going south. And so without capping this growth in the budget, you're faced with increasing budgets at 4.5% a year every year. That's the problem.
Jeremy, we're going to next slide. So this is the same slide, but under Governor Dunleavy's plan, including his constitutional changes, the spending limit, the full PFD.
And the reductions.
And reductions. Again, none of this works without reducing the budget. That is the key to all of this right now, because you got to reset that baseline lower in order to use the revenues that we have. Again, we're the envy of many other states as far as resources go, both financially and natural resources. But unless we get our spending under control, our revenues are going to outpace our expenditures. However, under this scenario, this is the governor's plan. We do show a full PFD, the budgets are balanced, and the earnings reserve grows. Also, no red bars out here. If we get our spending under control, we can definitely put a tax off for a couple decades. We do start to see some excess draws out here 25 years out or so. But those are good problems to solve compared to trying to tax $7 billion out of our economy, which is just impossible under the other scenario. So this is the last slide I'll speak to. And again, this goes to, you're going to hear a lot about different plans that are going to be rolled out by the House, by the Senate. We've been waiting for that. The governor put his plan on the table in February, and now we're going to start to see how the other two bodies plan to tackle this problem or not tackle the problem. But it'll be very apparent. On the right is the governor's plan. We show these are dividends. We include his back pay bills for the last 3 years of dividends that were reduced under either veto or by the legislature and the governor. But then we show the nice dividend growing in the out years. I think this was the one that really shocked. We presented this in the House as a scenario. We didn't know it was their scenario. And I think a lot of people thought that this $500 dividend would just go on forever. But as you can see, with government growing, you gobble up the dividend in 2 years, and then you start eating into the ERA. So now Donna's going to speak a little bit about the expenditure side of the equation.
So our fiscal instability has not only diminished our dividends and also given great uncertainty to the future of all of state services, but it's had economic consequences as well. You can see from this graph that Alaska used to be at or leading the nation in economic growth. But since we stopped balancing our budgets, started spending down savings, and started sending signals to anyone who would invest in Alaska that we don't have our fiscal plan in order, our economy has lagged. Up in that corner, it says rank 50th. That means we're dead last in economic growth. Commissioner Tangeman, I think, laid out very clearly why we need to reduce state spending and why we need a long-term fiscal plan. I'm going to briefly address the four major cost drivers in the budget. The first is the Marine Highway System. You've heard a lot about this. We've got $1 billion in assets, but we're managing to lose about $100 million a year. We think we can do better. We think we can do better, or we think private operators can do better. By simply changing the focus to return, this is a complicated graph, but it shows that our fare box returns have gone down significantly. They were never 100%, but now they're just over 30%. Again, we're losing a lot of money. By simply changing our focus to returns, we could run the system at a fraction of the cost. But we think we can do better than that with private operators. For example, the state failed to turn a profit not only on the fares, I mean on the routes, but also on housekeeping services, food services. We even failed to make a profit on bars. The University of Alaska. Alaska subsidizes its universities more than double those of the other states. And I don't know if you can see this, but we're not getting a return from that. These are our graduation rates. 10% is not a passing grade. We need to do better. We keep pouring money into the system, and we're not getting our outcomes.
I'm a farmer.
Governor, I'll just go back for one more minute. We do have some bright spots in the university, which is our community campuses. They provide an efficient education and actually have the ability to train students for real jobs in Alaska. The university system, we're asking to reduce their duplication of programs like multiple engineering schools, multiple four-year degrees, multiple graduate programs. They also need to do better at bringing in research dollars. They significantly lag other land-grant universities around the country. We'll give you a lot of statistics about that. We could do a lot better. Our proposal is actually to increase spending on community campuses, but again, look for major changes in the university system. Okay, thanks. Medicaid, major cost driver of the state. You can see that the costs of Medicaid are going to be unaffordable. Our enrollment's growing, our costs are growing. We're not going to be able to afford this system. So we're working with Washington, D.C. to try to change the way we deliver health care in Alaska. We're looking at a commercial health insurance system that'll be fair to beneficiaries but eliminate the waste and inefficiency in our current system. And then finally, K through 12 education. While by any measure, the amount of money we've been spending on K through 12 has soared with high oil prices and continues to soar since then. Unfortunately for our children, they haven't soared at the same time. We can show you category after category of proficiency. This is grade 4 reading. And for those of you who can't see it, we're dead last. Dead last in the country. We think we can do better.
That's as a system. There are certainly islands of brilliance and some amazing schools and certainly a bunch of dedicated teachers. It's just system-wide is what we're referring to in terms of the NAEP scores that come out every 2 years for grades 4 and 8.
And there are many others. So continuing to pour money into it is not the solution, but cutting the budget is a solution that we need to have in order to bring stability to school districts and for the rest of state services. But beyond that, the governor is going to be proposing reforms to change our educational system and do things, for example, concentrate on K through 3 reading, concentrate on career and technical education, and allow content and educational opportunities for students all over the state, regardless of where they live or go to school.